Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush. Charles W. Chuck Bryant here. Right now, for this intro piece at the Pont Studio here in Atlanta, Georgia. But as you will soon learn, this episode was recorded at our Hollywood studios. Very fancy Hollywood studios. Actually, they're not fancy at all, but they're great. Right there in the heart of Hollywood, I went out to L.A. and got a few episodes in the can, and this one is with Mr. Ben Acker. And Ben, if you don't know his work, was the co-creator and writer of the wonderful live show Thrilling Adventure Hour that ran for years in Los Angeles, kind of like an old-time radio show, just really, really great stuff. And it was also released as a podcast that you can still get. Ben is a writer for Marvel Comics. He is a writer of screenplays. He has written Star Wars books. Ben basically is good with his fingers on the keyboard and is one of my great, great pals. That's why this episode on Miller's Crossing, the excellent, excellent Coen Brothers gangster movie starring Gabriel Byrne and John Turturro, that's why this one went so long, because we dived deep into one of my favorite movies. And if you're a fan of the Coen Brothers and Miller's Crossing, get ready for a Roman Mars Jaws-like experience with this, as we kind of go through the entire movie and really geek out and wonk out on what a great, great picture this is. So, without any further ado, I'm laughing because I just listened to this one yesterday and to make sure it was all good. And it was just so much fun for me to even listen to it, because Ben is so funny. I've often said that if you're in a room full of comedian types that are all joking and riffing back and forth, if you just quietly pay attention to Ben Acker sitting there, making his subtle jokes, he is the funniest person in the room. So without further ado, here we go with Ben Acker on Miller's Crossing. All right, well, let's start. I don't do a formal intro. We'll just, like, kind of keep rapping.
You're going to do a formal intro, or you
don't? No, I don't.
All right.
But we'll just keep talking about stuff.
Right now?
Yeah, the show's going on.
Wait, so starting now is the show?
Yeah, I mean, I'll find an entry point.
All right.
that might actually be a funny entry point.
I was going to say. I don't know how shows work, but I have heard other episodes of this show.
Yeah.
Particularly the Tig episode.
Man, that was crazy.
That was crazy. But also then, like, the Hodgman episode,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, I mean, like, Tig had a earth-shaking experience that day in a good way. And so there was this base of the humanity of her as an ingredient.
Yeah.
And then Hodgman is a conversational memoirist, I want to say, where it's like, well, here's the time I spent working in the video store and what that means. Like, I was talking to a friend today, and he has this ability that Hodgman has and that Roderick has to the glassification of a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, here's the personal anecdote.
Uh-huh.
And then let's zoom out and see how that represents all of humanity. And
like,
we connect to the people. And
like,
I was like, oh, all right. Well, Chuck's doing this show. He's going to hone his interviewing skills. So let's hope that someone in this conversation, because I'm a big, like, and then I go, and then he goes, and then a funny punchline, and we're done. Right? Like, it led to this. And then that, you didn't see that coming. It took you left, and then we go right. And then that's it. Is it about something? I don't know. Let history tell us.
Yeah.
So hopefully between the two of us, we'll be able to find, I don't know, some of the ethereal quality of some of your better guests.
No, yeah. Well, it's just us having a good Acker and Chuck conversation.
Wait, I'm the last name and you're a first name?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, Acker Bryant.
I don't know if that's unfair in your direction or my direction.
I don't think I've ever called you Ben, though, have I?
I don't know.
Sounds weird coming out of my mouth.
Then probably you haven't. There are people who don't call people by their names ever, and then they do, and it's not a big deal, but it sounds like one because the word is new in their mouth, or the person is new to hearing that version of their name.
Right.
Yeah, that was Hodgman-y, right?
Yeah. Paul Tompkins was just in here.
Oh, yeah?
Nice. But some people call him Paul F.
Yeah, sure.
I don't even know what the F stands for. I meant to ask him.
Francis, I want to say.
That was going to be my guess.
Yeah, because he seems like that kind of guy.
Totally. He's a Francis.
Uh-huh.
And he was going to – actually, his first pick was Topsy Turvy, but that movie's impossible to find on demand or streaming or iTunes or YouTube. Uh-huh. Like, I literally would have to buy it and
downtown from a guy.
Yeah, find a DVD player.
Uh-huh.
And I just didn't have time, so he went – He said, "What about Miller's Crossing?" I was like, "Oh boy."
Yeah, he loves this movie. Did you do it? Is there going to be a two Miller's Crossing?
No,
is
no.
This the Comet movie of,
I told him that,
This podcast is called. Movie Time with Chuck and Nobody, a guest, Chuck and a guest.
That's what it's called.
What is it called?
Movie Crush.
Movie Crush.
Yeah. It's a good title, right? So Paul went
We started?
Yeah, we've started.
Okay.
So Paul went with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid as his third pick.
Wow. I can't believe I scooped Paul.
Yeah, he scooped the heck out of him. We can curse too, though, if you want. So you don't need to worry about that. So you grew up in, why do I want to say Baltimore, but I know it's the D.C. area, but was it D.C. proper?
No, it was Northern Virginia.
Oh, okay. I'm way
McLean.
Off.
You're not way off. We had the same radio stations.
Okay. Yeah. You shared, what were they, all D.C. stations?
Yeah. Well, no, Baltimore, like HFS.
Yeah, they're big stuff.
Are you from, you're not from around there.
No.
You have a twang.
Yeah, Atlanta. Yeah. You know that.
Yeah. But you had a knowledge of it that maybe you spent some time. There was a radio station called WHFS that if you ever, like if you lived there before a certain point, you would, that's how you, that's the shibboleth. For other people that live there, you're like HFS and they're like, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Gotcha.
That was the cool indie alternative station that had once a year, I think maybe twice a year, the HF Festival that was the big like, Fugazi and the MLB Giants are going to be on the bill no matter what or whatever. Like it was the cool place. And then one day with no warning and no internet, boom, it was, it changed formats and you didn't know what happened.
It just went away.
Station. Yeah.
But, that was out of Baltimore.
Yes. I'm pretty sure.
But you're from Northern Virginia. What's the town?
McLean.
What's that like?
Suburbs. It was like pretty standard suburbs.
Yeah.
I went back recently for the first time in a while to find that the Roy Rogers became a McDonald's. And that felt like, that's about it.
That figures.
And now there's like yoga and stuff. Like, I don't know. It was suburb. It was straight. Like, I went to school with politicians' kids.
Oh, okay.
Chris Scalia and I went to our first Weird Al concert together.
Really?
Yeah. Good dude, Chris.
Wow. So that's the son of Anton.
And Ben Quayle played on like basketball and youth and soccer. Like we were in elementary school together. So when his father announced, like they announced that he was going to be the vice presidential candidate, the difference in my life was going to the gym for basketball practice and the teams before that were practicing had Secret Service dudes around.
That
was it.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you good at basketball?
No, but I was tall at basketball.
Right.
Like, I'm 6'6 now, and I was 6'5 2 years ago. Like, I've been 6'5 forever, but I went to the doctor this past year, and they were like, you're 6'6, and I'm like, no.
Really? You've grown?
Like, yeah, you're 6'6
That's
now.
Impossible.
Which is crazy in my adult life to, like, gain an inch. I've got reverse osteoporosis. Not to brag, not to throw it in your goddamn face, but my bones are getting better. I'm taller. But, yeah, no, I was fine at basketball sometimes, and I was, like, post under the – under the hoop and get the ball to that guy.
Yeah.
You're tall. I was all like, people talk about growing pains. I didn't know until recently that it wasn't a pretty metaphor for, you know, growing up or whatever.
Right.
That it was a thing that people who got tall all at once had.
Did you get tall all at once?
No, I was always the tallest one.
Gotcha.
So I recently picked up a basketball again.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time. And I couldn't be more Herman Munster.
Yeah, like, it's funny because I used to play basketball.
Doesn't stick.
And I was okay, believe it or not. And,
I believe it. You're good at stuff.
That? but then I like spent many, many years without playing at all after playing just recreationally for fun forever. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed at how you lose it.
Yeah. You like, absolutely just the, lose
I felt clumsy.
It's not like riding a bike.
Yeah. Which, but it came back though.
Well, but I, not to brag, but I've been on a bike here and there over the time, and that sticks with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For real.
Like that expression ain't whistling Dixie.
And that expression, well, I can't even go from there. So do you have siblings?
I have one. Not to brag again. my brother. He's fine.
Are you guys pals?
We're all right.
All right. But I mean,
like, we're not distant.
Well, I mean, I'm not getting into family therapy, for Christ's sake.
You're certainly not. I'm trying not with your questions.
I'm trying to get a sense of like you're growing up as it relates to movies, Ben.
Right. Okay. So I had a brother. We did not watch a lot of movies together.
Okay.
We were 4 years apart, so our tastes were disparate.
But were you into it?
Was I into having a brother or movies?
Were you into it? Were you, this is going, I love this. This is going to be my favorite one, I think.
Yeah, cause I'm like you. This is the one where you don't have to like talk up to a guy that you admire. You're like talking to a mirror.
We are kind of like this weird,
What do you want to do?
Like, I'm like a smaller version of you.
Yeah.
Like going to movies and stuff.
That's what we are like. I wasn't just being confrontational.
Going to movies and stuff was like, was that a big passion of yours early on?
Yeah, it must have been. Like, I can tell you, I feel like there's a bonus round at the end with quiz questions that I don't want to inadvertently answer in advance.
Okay.
But I remember, like, early movies going to, like, Ghostbusters and, and like the Ferrells next to it, like the experience of going. Like,
oh, you had Ferrells too?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a Ferrells.
Yeah, there's like one left in Southern California.
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, Ferrells was an ice cream parlor.
With like the vests.
Yeah, like the traditional old school. It might as well have been like a 19th century ice cream parlor.
Right, but also like a very 70s ice cream parlor. Yeah. Where like if you order the Matterhorn or whatever,
yeah,
there's whistles and bells, like literal right. ones that, as they bring it out to your table. Maybe sparklers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what. Is my memory and what is like a PJ Pooter Toots Ben Stiller show parody of that style of
right.
ice cream establishment.
Yeah. So you would go to
Matterhorn, I think, is Ben and Jerry's.
Oh, was it?
I don't know.
So you would go to movies and go to Ferrell's?
No, but I like that the experience of going to this one particular movie theater. Like, I would occasionally go to Ferrell's, but it was right next to the movie theater in Tyson's Corner, the mall near my house where we'd go see movies.
Okay, so it was a mall theater.
Uh-huh.
Which were the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, but then growing up in like, in high school, then we got that theater, I think, went away. The mall renovated and there were other movie theaters in the neighborhood or close enough that we were like choosy about it. My friends and I were, yeah, we were the kind of people that would like spend too long at Tower Records
right.
and video, like choosing what to rent because it was important.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And like going to the movies when they came out and that kind of thing. Yeah.
Man, I wonder how much time we spent, because I was the same way, walking around video stores, reading boxes.
Man, in college, there was a movie, a rental place that was Chimneys. It was 5 movies, 5 days, $5.
Okay.
And I had a pal with 2 VCRs.
Uh-huh.
And it was like,
oh, so you dub them.
Let's have all the movies.
Yeah.
And I remember throwing away, like when DVDs became a thing and then Netflix especially became a thing.
Yeah.
Just throwing away. Like, I think we probably did SLP.
Uh-huh.
So like 3 movies per tape.
Oh, yeah.
Per videotape. And just going, never watched that. Never watched those. Goodbye, videotapes. I can get any of these on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good feeling not having to, like, knowing the next time you move, you don't have these big cases of videotapes of movies you've never
wanted to watch. That's kind of the big change of digitization is when we move. That's really the only change is
well,
we don't have boxes
also,
of shit.
In your house, you don't have clutter.
Yeah, true.
It's nice.
Well, no, you have other clutter.
Do you?
Yeah, sure.
What do you got? Where the videotapes used to be, what do you have?
That's a good question.
Like, I realized the last move that I did, books aren't trophies. You can keep the books that you might reread or lend or have of value to you.
Yeah.
But if you haven't read the thing and you've had it on your shelf for a couple years, that's not a brag.
That's
like,
tough,
if
though.
Someone might read it,
yeah.
give it to that person, you know?
Books is something, books are something I still sort of hold on to.
Yeah.
But I should.
I do too, but not as many. Like, I've got my favorite book series, you know? That I, you know, I collected before they reissued them, and you could get them all easily, you know. The ones that are like, yeah, this would feel good to have read this book, but it had its chance.
Do you do ebooks?
I do. Yeah, now I do ebooks. That. For comics, I read comics still, and Comixology has obviated the need to have a long box.
What is that? Is that
store.
A?
It's a Kindle for comics.
So you made the leap in full.
And the resolution's better for the art. And like, they're easy to find once you have them. You can find them and reread them or whatever, but they don't take up space on your thing.
Yeah.
And they don't take up space in your house.
Right.
Yeah.
I think you've sold me. I'm going to go burn all my books.
Yeah, that's the – no, here's the thing. Like, a major thing was a friend of mine. Do you know Brian Whalen? I know him through Paul. He was a comedian that came up in Philadelphia with Paul. And he works at St. Vincent de Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I would give away – like when I would be put in boxes of books, like, I don't need these. He'd be like, let me take them because the homeless have literally very little to read.
Right.
And then another friend of mine sends his stuff to soldiers, like comics, getting rid of boxes of comics, sending them to soldiers.
That's great. You know,
there's good places to put your books that you're not using.
What about those VHSs?
I wonder if they will bust you for throwing away. Like, I got a replacement for my TiVo, my DVR box, not the mass market.
How long ago?
Like, the thing was fritzing, so they sent me a replacement, and they were like, here, put this
in. But you still have TiVo?
No, it's a DVR, but, like,
okay.
You call everything a TiVo, right? Like, it's the
it's
Kleenex
been a
of,
while.
It's the Kleenex of
Really? DVRs. No, I haven't called it TiVo in a long time.
Oh, all right. My writing partner calls everything a TiVo. Like, he calls his iPhone a TiVo. Like, let's get in the TiVo and go to the store. You're supposed to throw away one of these things in a specific way.
Yeah, electronic recycling.
Right.
Yeah.
Is it the same for videotapes, or there's no actual chemistry circuitry in them?
Oh, no.
They won't bust you.
I don't think
you
so.
You just throw them in a regular, ordinary trash can.
Just throw it in the river like everything else.
Yeah, the LA River full of videotapes.
Uh-huh.
But so many that it's a surging sea of videotapes, of VHSs. It smells plasticky in that way that takes you back.
Yeah.
It smells like 2,600 cartridges.
That's why people love the LA River.
Huh?
All right. So you are going to movies with your pals then?
Yes.
And not your brother because you hate each other.
It's not that we hate each other. It's that we hated each other and we'll again.
Okay. But you and your buddies, you had a gang of dudes.
We had not just dudes. There were some ladies in the mix.
Oh, okay.
I remember vividly seeing True Romance with I remember the people I was with and that when, Trainspotting was another one that, like, I remember the day of that, seeing that and with whom and that kind of thing. Like, but yeah, growing up, yeah, movies were a thing.
I've got a True Romance thing that you might know. So you can just go, of course I knew that.
Christian Slater was in it. Yeah, I know that.
Do you know the movie theater where they see the Kung
Fu
movies?
The Sonny Chiba movie?
Do you know where that is?
No.
That's the Vista.
Oh, that makes sense.
It does?
Yeah.
No, it's Detroit.
Oh.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, it totally, like,
Shoot it in Detroit, did they?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, when I lived in Los Feliz and I saw the Vista and then went to the Vista a lot because
it's the best theater.
Yeah, it's the best theater.
Because what they do is they take out every other row.
I know.
So you got leg room for days.
For days. And
it's a fancy theater too. Like it's an Egyptian.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Theme. It's tall.
But mainly like people.
I mean, you can see it in True Romance probably.
People can get up and go pee and walk down the aisle and no one has to move a muscle and say, oh, excuse me, can I get by? It's wonderful. But anyway, I was rewatching it and it's the fucking Vista. And they put, you know, how they fool you is they put a fog machine under a manhole cover and steam rises out and they put coats on the actors and then, that's Detroit.
You know what? I watched it recently. It was on TV and I watched it from the scene after that, like they're getting pie after.
Well, you might have seen it and go, oh, man, that's the Vista.
I'm saying if I had tuned in one scene earlier, right. I would have been like, oh, the Vista. And I would have, like, your trivia would have been ho, ass, hum.
That's such a good movie, though.
It's really – I think it's his best.
Tarantino's best script or Tony Scott's best movie?
You look back at Tarantino's career,
uh-huh.
It's his best movie. I'm not saying it's his best script, whatever. I'm saying it's his best movie.
Yeah.
Probably. Let's say this. It's the one I like the best.
No. I'm with you there for sure.
It's the one I can revisit. And
Pulp Fiction got a little tired, but it was so great.
I'm not against Pulp Fiction, but like, I don't know. If Pulp Fiction feels like an exercise in storytelling, and this is just this is a Pulp Fiction story, like a story out of a Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
True Romances.
Yeah.
And like.
Everyone's so good in it too.
Everyone's so good in it. And watching it again and. I don't think we're talking about it today. This isn't the movie we're focusing on, True Romance.
No, but we're talking about all kinds of movies.
But watching it again, it was like, man, that's Christian Slater. Like, that's the same guy that was in The West Wing and Pump Up the Volume.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's – but, like, if you think of Christian Slater in the abstract, True Romance I don't think pops up. Like, if you were playing a movie trivia game – with the films of Christian Slater and you said True Romance, I think the audience would be like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Even
right.
though he's the star of the movie.
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Like, and it was like that with it. Like, what is her name? Patricia Arquette.
Mm-hmm.
That's that lady from a procedural.
Right.
Right. But Man, she's
Alabama
great.
Alabama Whirly.
That's Alabama Whirly. And to this day, "You're so cool."
Yeah.
Is the best compliment anyone can give anyone.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I have said "You're so cool" and meant it.
Yeah.
And it's been like, I am in a moment where I thought that about a person and said, like, it's like, "I love you" is fine.
Uh-huh.
Like, say that if you mean it.
Right.
But "You're so cool"
yeah, that's pretty
is
great.
A rarefied yeah. version of that.
Like, there's no way that somebody can tell you that, and that just doesn't make you feel like the best you've ever felt.
You're winning in a drug deal you shouldn't be in.
Yeah.
Like, you're dominating Saul Rubinick.
Yeah.
Man.
So good.
Like, and everybody, every inch of like that casting, and then you go, uh-huh. I even like Michael Rapaport in this.
Yeah.
When's the last time you've like, man.
He's great.
He's great in
it. Dick Ritchie.
Uh-huh.
Man, I haven't seen that forever. And Gary Oldman just chews that scene up uh-huh. that he's
but
in.
But not like he does in Fifth Element where you're like, I get it. You're doing something to this. But
yeah.
like, yeah, where it's.
And of course the Hopper walking scene.
Yeah.
One of the best.
But like Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Condescend me, man.
Uh-huh. I went out and made a Honey Bear Bong after I saw that movie.
And I watched – when I watched it recently, I mean, let's give that a moment because that's great.
Yeah.
but I watched that movie and Gandolfini wasn't really condescending to him very hard. Like, it wasn't –
oh, God, Gandolfini. I forgot
like,
about them.
That condescend me suggests that in the script and in Tarantino's head, the lines that Gandolfini was saying were much more – oily and manipulative.
Right.
Like Gandolfini plays it so like just I'm looking for these guys. Do you know where they are?
Yeah.
And it makes the condescension of paranoia to do with the drugs
right.
that Brad Pitt is on. Right?
Like yeah.
I don't know. He's not condescending you, man.
No, not at all.
Right?
I'm condescending meme.
But I feel like when I saw it as a teenager,
uh-huh.
I was like, yeah, fucking grown up is condescending to that person that is the me equivalent of this movie. Not that I was smoking pot in high school or
right.
anything, but like the guy with the power is really by dint of the power structure set up in this movie.
Yeah.
The standing guy is really dominating the laying down guy.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to.
Uh-huh.
Oh man, that's great.
It's all power dynamics. Everything visually is.
All right, well, we should get into Miller's Crossing then because
– never seen it.
This has long been – well, I love the Coens so much. It's hard to say my favorite. But Miller's Crossing was always up there to me. Pre-Fargo, mm-hmm. I would say Miller's Crossing and Barton Fink were probably my two favorites. But I love everything, so it's like picking your babies, you know?
I came late to Miller's Crossing, which is why I think I love it so much.
Oh, interesting.
Like, it wasn't one that I saw at the time.
Uh-huh.
It was one that, like, it was one of those, oh, right, Miller's Crossing is one by them. I
right.
should check that out.
Okay.
Like, recently, like in my 30s probably.
Is when you first saw it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And it knocked me out.
Yeah.
Right? And then the second time I saw it, I didn't remember anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than I really liked it.
Was the second time today?
No.
Oh, okay.
This is probably the fourth or fifth time.
Okay.
And recently I was on a podcast talking about Barton Fink, which I rewatched. And I loved Barton Fink.
Uh-huh.
And rewatching it, I really like Barton Fink.
Oh, interesting. Didn't hold up as well?
It didn't hold up as well because I feel like I was – it washed over me the first time.
Yeah.
The first bunch of times I saw it. And now I'm watching it to talk about it specifically on a podcast and going, uh-huh. this doesn't make sense. And maybe it does. And like, let me try an interpretation of what this is about because of this and
yeah.
that and visually this and the other thing. And like, that's interesting, but it's not the narrative that I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's repetitive in a way that's like, boy, I don't like Barton Fink as a guy. Like, I sympathized with him the last time, and
yeah.
this time I'm like, just let John Goodman finish.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that's what it's about or whatever, but like, I was worried going into this viewing of Miller's Crossing that I did today,
uh-huh.
that like, maybe the spell would be broken, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
This movie is phenomenal.
It is. 1990, so I saw this in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember that experience?
Yeah. I mean, I was early to the Coens because I happened upon Raising Arizona at the Dollar Theater
mm-hmm.
when I was in high school because we would just go to the Dollar Theater after church on Sunday nights a lot. You just had a look.
No, I was just like, I'm not a church person.
Yeah, I'm not either anymore.
The idea of going to church and getting out at nighttime.
Yeah.
As a guy who only knows about church from like
daytime
movies and shows about it.
Yeah.
Thought it was a daytime thing or like a midnight mass thing.
No.
But the idea that like you go to church and I'm like, the look that you saw was me going, did church last all day? Or was there like a late shift to church?
There's two shows.
Uh-huh.
There's the matinee.
Uh-huh. Which is the one that conventional wisdom's, if you don't know about church.
That's the one you dress
that's the
up
one you
to.
Think about. Okay. Oh, so there's a casual Friday late shift.
Yes. Like. There's a casual Friday late show on Sunday evening.
Okay.
It's kind of funny to think back that
after supper
church was twice a day on Sundays.
Yeah.
So weird.
Was it after dinner?
Geez, that's a good question. Dude, I went to church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, and Wednesday night.
Oh, you did both shows?
Yeah.
And a third.
Oh, you know what it was? I think Sunday night was like youth group mainly.
Okay.
It's hazy. It's been a while.
But it might have been like, you're not going in for the full, there's not a sermon, there's not more.
I know what it was.
All right.
This is very important.
I'm trying not to hold your feet to the fire.
Sunday morning was formal church.
Right.
With the adult choir in their choir robes and all that whole deal. Uh-huh. Yeah, adult choir.
Yeah.
The sexiest choir.
I would choir. Watch that show on Cinemax. Hey, after church, do you want to have adult sex?
And then the night church was casual.
Night church. And I would also watch that show.
Night church is casual and we sang, the youth choir sang, but we didn't wear robes. It was just like
naked
T-shirts and jeans.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
And, and then there would be like, the youth group would always go out and do stuff afterward. That was mainly why.
Oh, so you and your church friends would go, not you and your family.
Me and my church friends would go to the dollar movie quite often after night church.
Would you like take a buck out of the collection plate for your movie?
No.
No.
I did tell this other story though. It was the 99 cent movie and it was kind of adorable looking back as they had they took it seriously. They had a big stack of pennies. And when you bought the ticket, they would slide a penny in your ticket across the thing, which is kind of neat. And it was just a county fair ticket. It wasn't like, here's the movie you're seeing. Uh-huh. It just said, you know, admit one.
Nice.
So anyway, that's a long way of getting around to the fact that I saw Raising Arizona by chance. We just went and it blew me away.
Yeah.
And I had never seen anything like it before. Uh-huh. And it was a really kind of monumental. It was kind of a sea change movie for me as far as like, wow, this is different than anything I'd seen. And this is what movies can be.
I had that same experience, but for Hudsucker Proxy.
Oh, okay. No. Well, you're younger than me, so that
for now.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You know?
Like that's your Raising Arizona.
Yes, and it really is. Like Raising Arizona doesn't do it for me.
Okay.
And I got into this on the other podcast, but
what show is that?
It doesn't come out till January.
No, but what's the name of the podcast?
Right. It's Craig's List.
Oh, and it hasn't even debuted yet?
No, it's out. But my episode doesn't come out in January, and I don't want to spoil.
Right.
That they're going to do Barton Fink with me in January.
Well, no, this will probably be after that even.
Okay, great.
Because I got a big kitty built up.
That's because you're a professional.
Craigslist? Craigslist.
Craig Kakowski watches. He's the kind of guy. He's an improviser and a thorough genius brain. And like a thing in improv is like know everything about everything. And Craig like was already doing that. So improv was a great home for him.
Right.
And he would make lists of his favorite everything. So he's going through his top 100 favorite movies in order and subjecting his wife Carla to them.
Uh-huh.
So they're watching together and they do not share a taste. So it is fun tension to like, will this podcast destroy their marriage is the implicit question.
And how does the guest figure out?
And then they have guests to talk about movies from
there. And they're both in there?
Yes, Craig and Carla are in there with a guest sometimes and sometimes just the two of them.
Oh, that's fun.
It's a great podcast. It's really fun.
I'll check that out.
If you like movies or Craig or Carla.
Well, I don't know them, but.
Yeah, but you will. Oh, man, you'll get insight into them.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like fun. I know Emily would love to do a podcast with me, and I'm like, no, we can't do that.
Because you have a marriage.
That's right.
Yeah.
So that was Hudsucker Proxy was your Raising Arizona.
Absolutely. I walked out of that theater in DuPont Circle going, that's what they can do?
Yeah.
And like, I was reading up about Coen Brothers movies today for because I like to prepare as a guest. And the reviewer, this guy for The Atlantic did this, for the anniversary of Blood Simple.
Yeah. Oh, God, what a great movie.
He's like, here's all the Coen Brothers movies in order and like what I think of them and, and Stray Notes and that kind of thing.
Ooh, I got to check that out.
And he was like, Hudsucker Proxy is the, almost the worst one. And I couldn't disagree more.
Yeah. I love that movie.
It's great. And, but like you can see in the stuff that I've done its influence. Like you can see, you know, the oldie timey of it.
Yeah.
And the like, but it's not about the oldie timey. It's about character. Like that's just a sheen on it. And the characters get to be eloquent or be hokey or be whatever they are.
Right.
Like you can, like there are a couple of things that like now that I've done the show that I've done, I did a show for a while called The Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is a stage show in the style of old time radio. If you're unfamiliar with me as a person, I don't know why you're listening to this, but I did that thing and it's available on iTunes forever. But, I can see now that I've stopped doing that show every month all the time and it, as a thing that I've done, I can look at it and go, oh, The Tick was an influence. Oh,
right.
Hudsucker Proxy, like the things that I like that come back up to me at times, I can go, oh, that really, I internalized that in a way that I wasn't aware of that I was doing that. Like comics that my grandmother kept that were my father and uncle's old comics.
Right.
The looking at culture as a way to look at history, you know, like a different time and place. A culture is a thing that, among other things that it did, transport you, which is part of what I love about Miller's Crossing and doesn't resonate with me in Raising Arizona, not because it doesn't take place in another time, but for some reason the dialogue in it takes me out of it. I don't know if it's the dialogue or the delivery or what, but the even more ludicrous turns of phrase in Miller's Crossing make me want to hug this movie.
Yeah.
And in Raising Arizona, I'm like, I see the seams of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe the South is a...
The South. It was Arizona.
Okay. yeah, that makes sense. That tracks. But like that kind of like hayseedy character, right?
I hear you.
Like feels like a specific choice that is like not playing to the top of the intelligence of characters.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure the Coens don't do that.
Right.
Necessarily. Or they do it universally, and so it should be a complaint across the board.
Yeah.
But generally, that accent makes me suspect of the thing I'm going to watch. Is it going to be Smoking the Bandit time? Right. No offense to you. I hear your lovely Southern drawl, and all I want to do
– Do I have a Southern drawl?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah. No.
No.
More than somewhat.
Come on. Yeah?
You do.
No.
That's an impression.
Of me?
Yeah. Of me?
Oh, come on.
Howdy, howdy. I'm Chuck.
You suck.
You put two syllables in Chuck every time you say it.
No, I don't.
Maybe not.
So, Miller's Crossing.
We're having fun, audience. I hope you're having fun.
We are having fun.
And Chuck, I also hope you're having fun.
That very first scene of the movie, what struck me, and I've seen this movie a bunch of times, but watched it again the other night, took my notes, and I never really noticed just how quickly it picks up a story already in progress, basically.
The thing about this, one of the things I love about the movie is how dense every line is.
Oh, man.
Like,
the script.
It's
so good.
There are certain movies that make you. Like they're not subtitled, but they may as well be for how a specific kind of attention you have to pay to follow along because it's there. It's in there. It's in the dialogue, but it's not simple.
Yeah.
But it's not hidden. You just have to be with it.
Yeah. You have to really pay attention to this movie to
Brick
get it.
By Rian Johnson.
Yeah.
Is one.
Uh-huh.
That springs instantly to mind to have that same quality that this has where it's like, there's stuff going on, and you don't have to scratch it. You just have to be with it.
Yeah.
And this is, this is that. It's such an engaging movie because you have to engage with it.
Yeah, for sure. You can't casually watch Miller's Crossing and follow all the characters and what's going on.
But it's right there.
Yeah.
Like if the second you pay attention, you don't have to work hard. You don't have to – you don't have to decipher.
Yeah, it's not confusing.
Right.
You just have to pay attention.
And the performances are right there with it, man.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that.
And Polito,
opens John, the movie. He just passed away this year, right?
Recently.
Yeah, man.
Man, I mean, he's a dude that's in a bunch of Coen Brothers movies, but this performance is so good.
Yeah.
Like, he's just. I love a movie where you know how everybody smells.
Yeah.
You know, Godfather's one of those?
Uh-huh.
Like, Abe Vigoda in The Godfather is the most, I know how he smells.
Yeah.
Tessio. I know that guy. Like, he smells like my grandpa, but with this liquor and this aftershave and that suit.
Right. You know? And an old cigar.
Uh-huh. But, like, this movie, man, Polito.
Yeah.
His dyspeptic shit.
Uh-huh.
So good.
Oh, yeah, when he's just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. What do you think? What you were about to say, the opening of this movie.
I mean, that whole first scene, it picks up a story already in progress. Mm-hmm. It immediately establishes it as having like just, and I'll get to the criticism later about some people think it's too scripty, but I think it's just right on the money. Like mm-hmm. so many classic lines, just from the beginning with Leo saying, you know, you're as big as, big as I let you get and never any bigger and don't ever forget it.
Yeah.
And then in that same scene when Tom has the – he owes all the money to the guy. I can't think of the name right now.
Yeah. The Russian.
Yeah, to the Russian. And Leo offers to pay off his gambling debt. Oh. And Tom says, I'll square it myself. That's why God invented cards. And it's just such
it's
a
so
great
good.
Line.
There were – I took note of – there were a few expressions that they used in this movie.
Yeah.
That if you use them today, they mean nothing.
We used to dangle earlier, which is great.
I said dangle, but before I think we started the podcast.
Yeah.
But dangle's great. Like dangle's like the catchphrase you get from this movie.
Yeah.
Dangle's the drinking
and dangle, game. For those of you that haven't seen it, dangle means leave,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead and leave. But there were – and the reason I mentioned now is it started in this – the end of that scene is – something I don't know exactly the line, but it's something to the effect of yous all a bunch of fancy pants.
Yeah, you fancy pants, all of yous.
All of yous, right? And fancy pants, that was what made me notice this throughout the movie, is stuff that you would say now and people would be like, I don't even care.
Right.
Like it doesn't even make a dent, it's not a blip.
Yeah. That was a big insult though.
It was like, that's the thing is there were a handful that were just giant burns in this movie.
Yeah.
It's like the hell with you.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, you'd toss it off now, but the hell with you was like a condemnation in this movie.
Yeah.
Kiss off and nuts to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like these are moments in this movie. Like these are big moments where someone's like nuts to you. It's like,
yeah.
It's the like, big kiss off, say? Right? Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. And no one would say it. No one would say it
yeah.
now.
Or it's, a twist, which yeah. is something you don't even hear anymore.
Right.
Calling a woman a twist, a derogatory thing, I imagine.
Oh, sure.
Because Totoro, as this brother to Bernie Birnbaum, as a brother to the great Marcia Gay Harden, even said, she's a sick twist.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she even tried to teach me a thing or two.
Yeah. And in the sack.
Yeah.
That's what they're talking about.
God, we're going to bounce all around here, but I have to mention the score by Carter Burwell. Just
amazing.
One of the great, great movie scores of all
and
time.
And all variations on a traditional Irish song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Was it a specific song? Do you
yeah,
know?
It was. In the reading that I did today, I couldn't tell you the name of it, but I could tell you that Gabriel Byrne pitched it to the Coen brothers during shooting, and they listened to it, and they were like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I bought the soundtrack on CD, and I didn't do that a lot when it was just purely score,
mm-hmm.
But this was one of
yeah,
them,
yeah, I bet
too.
I would listen to this
yeah.
In writing things.
So great.
And Gabriel Byrne originally supposed to be acclimated, like what's the word? Naturalized? No, it's not the word. When you have no trace of the old accent, you become like
me with my southern accent.
No, like you with your southern accent. Gabriel Byrne was like, let me keep my original accent.
Yeah, I mean, has he ever been better than in this movie?
Not according to the internet that I read today,
yeah.
And not according to things I've seen him in.
I mean, he was good in Usual Suspects.
Yeah, but he was. Great in this.
Yeah, great. And like if Gabriel Byrne, I don't know how he feels about his career, but he played Tom Reagan in Miller's Crossing. And like he yeah. can sleep at night knowing
oh, yeah.
that I was fucking Tom Reagan in Miller's Crossing.
Yeah.
One of the great, great parts of all time.
It's so good. It's so good. He's, I feel like I'm going to not offer insight so much as just be like, this part was so good.
Well,
it was really good. I liked it. I liked watching it and listening to it.
Here's something I don't know if you
know. Crime, huh? I just don't know.
Well, first of all, he gets his ass kicked through the entire movie.
Yeah.
I lost
but
count.
But everybody
like,
respects
how many...
him so much.
Oh, yeah.
That they don't break any bones.
Yeah, yeah. But every, like, I lost count at how many people punch him in the face. Yeah. And then I noticed, and I've seen this movie so many times, I never noticed this. He doesn't hit anyone in the entire movie.
No.
All he just accepts the beating from whoever's giving it to him, whether it's Marsha Gay Harden or the toughs that come to, you know, the loan shark guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone in the movie kicks his ass through the entire movie. Leo kicks his ass in that great scene.
Oh, yeah.
All the way down the hall and down the stairs.
Yes.
That woman that he falls into, she kicks his ass.
Him walking out the door and the loan sharks like hitting him like out of nowhere. It's so good. Like my insight, it's so good.
No, I mean, but that's what this movie is like, is totally geeking out over this. And lines like, if I'd have known we were going to be casting our feelings into words, I would have memorized the Song of Solomon. So great.
Amazing.
Like, how do you write a line like that? You got to be the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
Or nothing more foolish than a man chasing his hat. Like, I say that still.
Apparently this movie is that. Like, this movie is
about a hat.
About a hat.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, there's definitely a hat.
You just track his hat.
Yeah.
And he's not, if he's not wearing it, you're not sure. But he is. He's in control the whole time. Like, I don't know. It's great because they don't really, a case could be made that this is a movie about a guy who loves a girl. Right?
Yeah. The very last thing I have on my notes is when it boils down to it, it's a movie about Verna and Tom.
But it might not – a case could also be made that it's not that at all, that it's about him and Albert Finney's character.
Yeah. It's a love story.
It's a love story between those two guys.
Yeah.
Like he sees
– Leo.
He sees Leo making a mistake.
Uh-huh.
And he does his best to – unmake that mistake for Leo and show him to the point that he throws himself on the bomb of, like, tells him the thing. And in the end, when Leo wants him back, he's ruined it. He's ruined the perfection of their relationship.
Yeah.
And, like, and if that's what the movie is about to you, A, that's a valid read, and B, what a sad thing that we never got to see the relationship. Because the opening scene is Polito pleading for Bernie Birnbaum's head.
Yeah.
Like, everything is so personally motivated in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
That, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I love it.
Uh-huh.
Like, a thing that I respond to and try and do in my own work is, as much a genre as you put on it, it's not going to be as compelling a story if there's not a personal human reason to it. And everything in this thing is motivated by love or affection or desire. Or I had the best teacher I ever had, high school English. Dave Sherritt is his name.
Uh-huh.
And he taught Macbeth line by line to a full class of students, and everybody got everything.
Yeah.
You know, we had to write a paper correlating Michael Corleone with Macbeth.
Wow.
You know, and the way into that paper was his thesis for the class. And I was watching this movie and it echoed in my head. I was like, oh, this is Dave Sherritt's thesis writ large. When your reason is overcome by your desire, there's trouble.
When your reason is overcome by your desire, there's trouble.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's every character in this movie
is
defying what they know to be the right course of action because of their desire. Like if Tom didn't love the woman or love Albert Finney,
right,
he could figure it out. Like, he wouldn't get behind the eight ball. Every character was like, nope, I want more power than I've been given. Nope, I want to help out this girl's brother because she's nice to me. Like, every character.
Yeah.
Every character's doomed because of this thing.
Yeah, because Tom, you kind of get the sense early on, even though the character of Tom would never show it, and he never does show it, that of course he loves Verna.
Right.
Because,
he says it right when she wouldn't believe him.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, exactly. And just like you said, with overcoming desire, like, if that wasn't there, then it would just be an easy solve.
Right.
There would be no movie.
Yeah.
She would just be a twist that he had a fling with.
Right.
And he could tell her to dangle.
Uh-huh. But she had his hat. That's when he started. As far as we know.
Uh-huh.
They might have started before that.
Oh, I think I always had the impression that they had already had a thing going.
Yeah.
Did you think that was their first thing?
I thought that I had that impression that they had a thing going as you did, but then the internet the article that I read.
Oh, interesting.
It was like, this is,
I never thought about
this. This was how she had him, was she had his hat. It's all about hats.
Huh. Well, it is all about hats, but I never considered that. That's an interesting take.
Yeah.
Well, we got to talk about the Danny Boy scene.
Yeah.
Because it's one of the best scenes ever. And I saw a bit of trivia today that apparently the Coens had that song, custom recorded.
Yes.
So it would time out.
It would time out with
perfectly.
The thing. Yeah, I saw the same.
I didn't know that. That's so great.
It's really great.
Yeah.
That's when I was watching it today. What struck me about that scene was the sound mix.
Uh huh.
Was the idea that he put on this record.
Yeah.
So it's, what is it, exegetic or diegetic?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's motivated within the movie.
Uh huh.
Right? But it's louder than the guns.
Right.
So at a certain point, it's soundtrack. It's not. Not a sourced within the movie anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's outside the house. You wouldn't hear it from the phonograph that he put on.
Yeah,
the
it's that
of
movie
scene.
Trick.
It's the movie trick.
Uh huh.
And probably that's a thing in movies all the time.
Right.
But because this scene is unique,
uh-huh.
It felt like a real specific choice to make, as opposed to like,
yeah.
We'll do the movie thing of like, then it's overwhelming. And
yeah,
it's,
and then
it's
the soundtrack. The
it becomes the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Like, this didn't feel like, this felt like there's a reason why the Coen brothers,
mm-hmm.
we saw the needle drop.
Right.
You know, and then it overwhelms it's no longer motivated by that.
Yeah.
It's a choice more than a movie that just does that because that's how you do it. I don't know. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm reading into it. Maybe
no.
It's just that's how movies work.
I think that's
But it felt like an interesting thing of like, so what does that say about this character who's unkillable because he's so badass and tough and like sees things like it's the godlike quality of this character, the reason that he is where he is,
yeah.
that he sees stuff coming and that he's,
yeah.
so he's so strong that it works as a metaphor for this guy who like, yeah, I'm going to put this on and it's not just going to come from it's going to come from everywhere. It's going to come from above because I as a character am God here.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can burn down my house, but I'm going to burn down your car with you in it.
Well, a few things about that scene that get me every time are, just how he notices with the smoke coming up through the cracks in the floor, and just the time he takes.
Isn't that this movie? Like,
yeah.
Isn't that what's great about the Coen brothers? Is the cracks on the floor that smoke comes through that a character notices? Like, it's so intricate. It's so intricate. Like, it's wonderful of them that they like
who would think of? I would never think of that in a million years.
Right.
That would be a not a plot point, but whatever, a device to move a scene forward.
How's he going to know? Well, he's smart enough to see the thing.
Well, anyone else would say, like, oh, he hears the gunshot, you know?
Sure. Sure, I guess he might have heard the gunshot. But Danny Boy's too loud. It's coming from on high.
Well, but that's the whole point, though.
Yeah,
it's like it's so much more rich with the fact that he sees the smoke coming through the
floor. I mean, not to – you're talking about the scene, and we'll get back to the scene. But
yeah.
Where we find out that Rug is dead.
Yeah, Rug Daniel. Was that his name?
I don't remember the last name, which is why I just said Rug. But
yeah.
The private detective that was sent to hire, sent to follow Verna that might have incriminating detail is dead. And the way that we see he's dead, we know his name is Rug, and there's just – it's a shot of a dog, then a child, then a dead fat man in an alley.
Yes.
And then the kid leans forward, and then it's a three shot of them.
Uh-huh.
And the
dog has that inquisitive look on his face.
And the kid reaches forward and takes the toupee off, and it's like, oh, that's Rug.
Yeah.
But
– And then as a kid would do, like, runs down the alley, like, I've just done something
bad.
Got
away with it.
Yeah.
But the way that that just – the way that they parcel out that scene visually, like, here's a dog. What? Like, it's a BuzzFeed article. I'm going to show you a shot of a dog, a kid, and a dude.
Right.
And what happens next may surprise you how relevant this scene is to the whole movie that you're watching.
Yeah. Man, that's such a great scene.
But back to the
But Danny Boy, just the I mean, I know it's obvious that he would not rush around, but just the time he takes in putting out that cigar, he puts on his slippers, and like he knows how much time he has, even though he doesn't know.
There is two of the wonderful things in this scene, in this sequence. He goes under the bed. These two guys with Tommy guns bust in the room, and he's got like a revolver.
Yeah.
And he goes under the bed, and these guys methodically shoot like straightforward, and they're basically strafing the bed.
Yeah.
In like
on either side,
straight line on either side. But like they'll hit him. Their plan is like we just keep going. So if he scatters out,
yeah,
like we're gonna hit him on the way. Uh-huh. Sometime we're gonna hit him, and he just shoots one in the leg.
Yeah.
In the foot, right? Because uh-huh. that's the level that he's at.
That drops
and
then, him.
Like, and that drops him. And you think like, okay, so on to the next guy. No, he puts a bullet in the brain of that guy
yeah.
whose head is facing him. Like it's just such a yeah. such a wonderful detail. And then the other thing that I love is his stuntman.
Oh yeah,
he this Albert
what, when he goes out the, down the roof,
60 years old,
yeah.
70 years old, and he exits out the window,
yeah.
and then just like
it's like a gymnast.
Sprightly gymnast,
yeah.
makes his way from the top floor to the bottom floor, and it is like it's at once like the stuntman is dressed the same, like the, it's not. If you live in Hollywood, right, you get to know somebody and then you watch the Buffy episode that they were on and you see that the stuntman looks nothing like the person, right? This, at once this stuntman was like fine and totally proportioned well and dressed the same, like they spared no expense on an Albert Finney double
uh-huh.
of a stuntman.
Yeah.
And on the other, just the fact that he's doing stunts is the joke.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah, for sure.
But it doesn't take you out of the movie.
Yeah.
But it kind of does, but it doesn't, and it's great.
Yeah, I kind of I buy it every time. And then, of course, how he ends it, he gets the Tommy gun from the guy he just brained.
Uh-huh.
Very calmly through the whole thing, walks out in the street, the car's going away, shoots up the car.
Oh, but first he like does the Thompson jitterbug.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, just a hail of bullets.
He shoots the guy in the house.
Oh, that's right.
And shoots and shoots and shoots and shoots.
Yeah, and he gets like 400 bullets in him, and he's shooting.
And he's shooting the guy who's being shot. His finger goes tight on the trigger,
yeah.
and he shoots up the house, his feet.
It's so ridiculous.
He just shoots around and around and around. And
yeah.
then
Finney right.
goes out into the middle of the street. Leo goes out in the middle of the street and just shoots the car till it's dead
yes.
and explodes in a ball of flame.
And then what does he do?
Cars in history. What does he do?
He takes the cigar out of
yeah,
his pocket
that's what he does.
And finishes.
Yeah.
With that Tommy gun still smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny Boy fades out.
Oh, my God.
It's just – it's. I get a little like chicken skin right now. It's so great.
Well, after this, we're going to get some chicken skins.
all right. So Tom Reagan commits one act of violence in the movie that I tracked, and it was in the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Again, he just gets his ass kicked through the whole thing.
And you know what I conflate this movie with sometimes? Do you ever see My Blue Heaven?
Yeah.
Steve Have you Martin. Seen it lately?
No.
I saw it lately, and it's really weird.
Oh, like, really?
It's from a weird time in movies where, like,
yeah,
I don't know, that 80s thing of what a woman is
uh-huh.
is just a little, like,
yeah.
And Rick Moranis is a hero type in it.
Right.
Like, when he kicks the ex-husband out because she can't do it. Like, it's,
yeah.
Like, don't do that in your movie.
Right.
don't make her swoon over that thing. But in the end, there's such a great turn. Steve Martin plays this mob guy who's relocated into
right. The suburbs.
The suburbs. And it's really just an excuse to trot out like this weird Italian character that he's doing.
Yeah.
Who like really misses actual Italian food in the suburbs. And the whole time, like, there's all this the threat of violence. He's a rat, he's gonna get whacked and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And his thing is he doesn't believe in guns. And at the end, he's making some point that he wants to make, that he's turned stuff around and is the hero now and cares about community and country and people in his life or whatever. And a mobster that we thought was done for pops back up.
Right.
He shoots him well. Like he has a gun. He takes a gun and shoots the guy
yeah.
and then throws the gun away to keep making his point. And Moranis says, I thought you you'd never fired a gun. And he just goes, I lied, and keeps talking.
Uh-huh.
And for some reason, I put that on Tom in this movie.
Uh-huh.
Of like, because such a big deal of him not being a guy who shoots people. He
yeah.
uses his mind.
Right.
That in the end, I just put a little bit of My Blue Heaven
right.
in my memory on it, which is disrespectful to Miller's Crossing. And I'm sorry to this movie. I apologize to the movie Miller's Crossing.
Well, I mean, of course, that first act of violence he commits is the great scene where Bernie finally gets whacked.
Yeah. Bernie, who
gives him a chance, you know.
The whole movie is about Bernie Birnbaum.
Yeah, I mean, has there ever been a bigger slime ball than Bernie Birnbaum?
Like, he sets everything away. Bernie Birnbaum didn't spoil the odds that gamblers have.
Yeah, yeah.
Then none of it would have happened.
Yeah, that's true. He was the original one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the opening scene with Polito is not begging, is as a courtesy.
Yeah, right.
I want to whack Bernie Birnbaum.
Yeah.
And no, I can't extend you that courtesy because I'm sleeping with his sister.
Right.
So good.
Yeah. And he's just such a scumbag when he shows up and says, you know, I thought, you know, you let me go, but if it might not be very good for you. Mm-hmm. And then he says basically what he wants, or I start eating in restaurants.
Yeah. I start eating in restaurants is such a great threat.
It is. Oh, man, there's so many good scenes, too. Like,
that's the thing is, as the movie lays out, you're like, this, that. Like,
yeah.
It's great scenes. It's great lines and scenes. Everything is just.
But it all weaves together so perfectly.
Weaves together. I love Mike Starr.
Who is that?
That's his name, I think. He's the heavy that is left to beat Gabriel Byrne. And Gabriel Byrne's like, 1 second.
Oh.
He gives him a second.
Yeah,
Gabriel
yeah.
Byrne puts his coat on the chair
yeah,
and then hits the dude.
Chair.
It's this dude that's just 1.5 size bigger. Like he's half again as big as Gabriel Byrne. And so Byrne hits him with the chair. And there's just this moment. He goes, ah, oh, geez, Tom.
Yeah.
And it's like his manners. It's a manners thing. Like, you don't do that to the guy that's supposed to beat you up.
Yeah, he got his feelings hurt.
Mm-hmm. So he walks out and comes back with some more guys.
Well, yeah, but he comes back. The funny thing is he comes back with that little old guy who's just like, you know, he fucking means business.
Yeah.
And he kicks his ass.
Yeah, he grabs the chair.
That's
like,
actually
– swings at him.
I have under the trivia here, the line, Jesus, Tom, is said 8 times in the movie.
Yes.
3 times by Leo, 1 each by Frankie, Mink, Bernie – Chief O'Doul.
Oh, my God.
And Mayor Levender.
Can we talk about how great Mink is
Levender.
In this movie?
Yeah.
Like, Steve Buscemi has one scene.
Yeah.
Right? One scene.
Yeah, the fast talk. I think that was the first, maybe the first time I saw Steve Buscemi.
Barton Fink, you didn't see?
No, but Barton Fink, oh, yeah, it did come out before this. Mm-hmm. Because they famously got writer's block on Miller's Crossing and wrote
Barton Fink
in like 3 weeks.
They got, oh, yeah, that's right.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
So maybe this did come out before.
No, I think that's what happened. I think because I don't want to look it up because they
were
writing.
Right, because I did look it up for the last podcast.
Yeah, they wrote Barton Fink while they had writer's block for Miller's Crossing.
Right, but they would have shot Miller's Crossing before Barton Fink.
Okay, is that how it came out?
Think,
yeah,
I think that's right.
Right.
Anyway, call in if you disagree. but yeah, Buscemi is so good. Like he is.
Yeah.
A mile a minute talking.
Yeah, and twitchy and like nervous. And
he's doing a lot of good acting.
Yeah, he is.
But yeah, the speed at which he.
Jesus, Tom.
And this is like, it gets like the amount of information they get out gets less as the movie goes on.
Yeah.
But they're still like, here's 10 things you got to know and 30 seconds to know it.
Yeah.
Like, and all this stylized dialogue with curly Q's and corners.
Yeah.
Going around.
God, it's dense.
It's beautiful.
So Bernie finally gets in the end. Like, there's never been a movie character that deserved to die more than Bernie Birnbaum.
Oh
like,
God,
he had all the opportunities to do it right.
Uh-huh.
And just that great last when he finally gets it when, you know.
He
tries that same shtick again that worked the first time.
But he already made fun of it to him. All I got to do is turn on the waterworks.
Yeah, exactly. Such a good scene.
Looking you hot.
And then what's the line? What heart?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get the bullet.
Oh.
And then, you know, that last final scene where they bury him out at, I guess at Miller's Crossing. I mean, it's in those same woods. Mm-hmm. And that's when Verna leaves and Leo has the great line, well, I guess we're walking out in the middle of nowhere. And they just start just sort of walking through the woods. And you get the sense that, like, these are two old friends again, kind of.
It'll never be the same.
Yeah. Everything is.
Because they're getting married? Because he's marrying Verna.
That's right.
She asked him.
Yep. And it's like the death of their relationship.
And that's it. That, like, here's my question. If Leo wasn't marrying Verna, and then he asked Tom to come back to work for him, do you think Tom would come back to work for him? Do you think it's spoiled from the events of the movie that he's never going to work for him again? Or do you think that it's because he's marrying the woman that Tom loves, he can't be around it?
I feel like something changed in Tom.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
What was it?
I almost get the feeling that Tom is angry at himself for having fallen in love.
One of them or both of them or?
For letting his feelings like get in the way of business
mm-hmm.
and his career.
So you think he's punishing himself?
Maybe.
By not coming back to work?
Yeah. It's almost like I get the feeling that after this movie ended, Tom was like, well, I got to where does this take place? Where is Miller's Crossing? What city is this? Like, let's say it's New York.
It's Illinois or something, right? I think it's New Orleans.
Oh, is it? No, it's not New Orleans.
Or they shot in New Orleans.
Let's say it's Chicago.
Let's say it's Chicago.
I'm just, you know, not saying it's Chicago, but let's say it's Chicago. I get the feeling that after this movie ends, he walks back into town, gets his hat, packs a small suitcase, and moves to New York.
Mm-hmm.
He just, like, gets – he leaves.
Oh, I would watch that.
Yeah.
Like, that's – I was watching this going, as much as I love the TV show Fargo
– mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as much as the second season of Fargo is a lot to this movie.
Yeah.
There's so much to do. Like Miller's Crossing being a place that they take people to go and put a bullet in them.
Yeah.
Like I would watch the hell out of a Miller's Crossing TV show by the people who brought you Fargo.
What too, man. Like, you could make that happen.
Yeah. Two phone calls.
What did you think about Tom at the end?
I thought it was that it was interesting that it's that is this a movie about Tom's relationship with Verna or Tom's relationship with Leo?
But did you think
– I thought it was that Leo ruined it by not trusting Tom. When Tom said, I never ask you to do this.
Yeah.
You just have to trust me.
Right.
And he didn't.
I don't ask for much.
I think that was Tom going, I'm going to do right by my friend.
Uh-huh.
But that's it. Then I'm out.
Like, you got to give me this one.
No, like him going, I'm not going to, like, that guy's my friend and I owe him everything.
Yeah.
So I'm going to fix the problem that he has right now.
Right.
But after that, I'm done with him.
Yeah.
Because he didn't trust me. He trusted this woman that's playing him.
Right. Who I love.
But also the principle of, yes, I love. Yes.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be a hard thing to reconcile. But that's not the important thing. That this guy who's trusted me said that he trusts this woman as the only one that he trusts as much as me as her and her as me.
Yeah.
And that's the moment where he knows that she's playing him, that we'll never have this bond because you just told me that you trust the person lying to you.
Yeah.
As much as you trust me, who's only after us, what we had.
Yep.
So,
man,
that's what it is to me, is like that. That moment is the death of that possible friendship forever.
Yeah. So great. All right.
But I love that I could be totally wrong.
Well, no. I mean, this is they very much leave it up to the audience.
Yeah.
You know?
But they spell everything out in just what the movie – like the stuff of the plot, the story so well. And so, like, that's the dazzling thing, is like how much information you're getting about the world
right.
in every line in the first two-thirds of this movie.
Yeah.
It's the why is maybe unknown to the characters, but it feels totally known to the Coen brothers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
It's an interesting thing. I'm working on a thing. I'm writing a thing with some people. And, like, we're figuring out pilot stuff, you know? And the instinct, once you figure it out, once you figure out, like, why a character or what a character or who a character or a thing about a character, the instinct is, so we need to establish that.
Mm-hmm.
And the strength of going, well, we can save that for a revelation somewhere down the line. It doesn't matter why. We don't need to shoehorn that in. If it comes out because it needs to come out, that's one thing. But holding it back and knowing the answer is going to give you such a richer
– yeah.
It's going to engage the audience to speculate on their own and go, okay, that's a specific behavior. It's motivated by something.
Yeah.
And won't that be compelling to know why?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
There's mystery to a character.
Yeah. But you know it as the writer. Know.
And so, like, it's not, whatever, we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's, no, there's a reason and we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Is interesting because that's this whole thing.
All right. We finish up with two segments.
Me segmenting you and you segmenting the ground.
My
favorite joke structure. Well documented. My favorite joke structure.
What Ebert said.
This movie is a complete disappointment.
This was a little disappointing. Ebert gave this 3 stars.
I read about that. He thought it looked like a commercial for the kind of movie that it was.
Yeah. So I'll read the pull quote here. Miller's Crossing seems like a movie that is constantly aware of itself instead of a movie that gets on with business. I'm also not sure that the other characters in the movie would inhabit quite the same clothing, accents, haircuts, and dwellings we see them in, because he's talking in the review about the Albert Finney, Leo's office, and how he would never be in an office like that. Which,
yeah, what? Exactly. Ebert, what? Ebert, you got to get yourself an office that you like.
Yeah.
So you can stop being mad at a pretend character's pretend office. He would never, in the fanfic that I, Ebert, wrote about Leo.
This doesn't look like a gangster movie. It looks like a commercial intended to look like a gangster movie. Everything is too designed. That goes for the plot and dialogue, too. The dialogue is well written, but it is indeed written. Don't get me wrong. There's a lot here to admire. Albert Finney is especially good as Leo. The crime boss and John Polito is wonderful as Johnny Casper, his rival. But the pleasures of this film are largely technical.
Which is weird. Like, I don't know. That's movies. Like, the artifice he's describing is movies. And so
and
you
a
have
period
to decide,
piece gangster movie?
You have to decide whether – and it's the problem that I had with Raising Arizona that I don't have with this. And I don't know why one makes – engages me and the other doesn't.
Yeah.
But, like
– one was about Hayseed Hicks and this was
– Right. But, like, the dialogue is just as written.
Yeah.
You know, it's just as removed from
– All their movies are like that, though. That's what's so great about the Coen brothers.
Right.
No one talks like that in real life.
Right. But also all movies. Right.
Yeah.
Or whatever, arguably. I don't know, but like, so Ebert's saying, like, I just didn't, which is hard for a guy whose job is to be objective and go this and then this.
Right.
And also subjective and go, I felt this and I felt that. Right. To go, it felt like this doesn't feel phonier than The Godfather, certainly.
No.
Right? But The Godfather was probably more naturalistic at the time.
Right.
And probably not in conversation about this movie. Like, it wasn't compared to.
Yeah.
Although I did read a thing that Tom Hagen is one letter away from Tom Regan. Or Reagan.
Interesting.
You know?
Yeah.
There's echoes in. Apparently there was a lot of The Third Man in this movie, but I've never seen The Third Man.
I haven't either.
But it ends at a funeral in the woods and somebody taking a car. I don't know.
That's Hodgman's favorite movie, supposedly. He went with Avengers.
He went with Avengers.
Yeah. We'll have to watch Third Man together.
Yeah, and tell Hodgman about it.
And five questions, Ben. First movie you remember seeing in the theater?
Did Ghostbusters come out before E.T.? No, E.T. was earlier.
I
vaguely remember.
They were both 1984, weren't they?
I don't know. I vaguely remember
E.T. was 82.
I remember Ghostbusters more. But the thing is, I remember seeing a preview for Ghostbusters. So there was a movie that I saw before Ghostbusters where I saw the preview for Ghostbusters and like that preview owned me. It was like spooky card catalog coming out.
Yeah.
And like, it was building a case for like ghosts are the scariest shit in the world.
Uh-huh.
And I was 7 or 8 going, yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
Ghosts are scary. Like I have had nightmares. I know what that is like. I know that ghost thing and I am not interested in this movie. And then the turn of who you're going to call, bum, 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 yeah.
Yeah.
Like those guys, I am seeing this movie.
Then it got light. Yeah.
So whatever the movie was that had the trailer for Ghostbusters is kind of the first, but I don't remember what that movie was. So Ghostbusters.
Okay. First R-rated movie.
Oh, the first R-rated movie I saw was a movie called Police Academy, and I was 9 years old, and I saw it at Brian Rothstein's birthday, and he was turning 10. And my parents were livid that a 9-year-old saw a boobs movie.
Uh-huh.
And so early in my living in Hollywood, I happened to meet David Graff, who played Tackleberry in the Police Academy movies. And I told him – we had a small conversation about a local taco restaurant, Henry's Tacos in the Valley.
As you do.
And then I was like, look, I got to tell you, because I was young, and that's when you have to tell somebody something about them, that they're not a part of the story. I told him, like, Brian Rothstein's birthday, I got in a lot of trouble. And David Graff, a very nice man, said to me at 21, so he said, there's a certain part of you, like, back in the backmost section of your brain that correlates me with your burgeoning sexuality. And I said, yeah, I guess. And he's like, that's great. It's nice to meet you. Like, it was just a weird, like, let me make myself a part of this story that, that we're in, and let me be genteel about it and funny. Like, it was such a warm, dumb, like, hey, we're strangers, but let's do a bit together.
Right.
You know, it was the bonding of a bit between strangers. And I remember him well. He died in the early aughts, I think. But remembered by me as a nice guy.
Right.
and not as a, like, part of my burgeoning sexuality so much as, like, my burgeoning Hollywood celebrity.
Yeah.
It's just people.
Yeah.
And that's a nice guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Will you walk out of a bad movie?
Yes. Love it. That reclaimed time is magic.
Paul F. Tompkins talked about how empowering that is.
He and I have walked out of movies together.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Which one?
Two. We walked out of Intolerable Cruelty by the Coen brothers.
He mentioned that, but he didn't say anything about you.
No, when I tell a story and Paul's there, I will mention Paul. It's not necessarily always reciprocated. And I don't begrudge him that. If you're listening, Paul, cut this out. We walked out. I don't know if he said, but when an argument between two lawyers goes poorly for George Clooney, and then Catherine Zeta-Jones walks out with her client, and George Clooney turns to his client and said, "That went well."
Yeah.
Paul and I looked at each other and went, "Shall we?" And we
really
walked the hell out of that movie.
See, I like that movie.
Well, that's fine for you. Uh-huh. And it probably turned around after that scene, dumb scene. But that's one of the Brian Grazer Coen brothers movies, so lesser Coen.
He complains about that too.
But the other movie that we walked out of was Kung Fu Hustle.
He did not mention that.
Well, then you've got an exclusive on your hands.
Okay.
We walked out of Kung Fu Hustle after so long in it that neither of us had a sense of whether that movie had an hour to go or 30 seconds to go. We were just done.
Yeah.
We were just exhausted by it. The stuff of it, the fun of exaggerated stuff because it's a kung fu movie.
Yeah.
Never took off. Mm-hmm. It should have been clips that you send around on YouTube. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Not a movie.
Not a movie. But we walked out of there and it was that thing when you walk out of a bad movie, reclaiming your time.
Right.
This is time that you have given over. You have already ceded this time to the movie. So you get it back. Everything you do in that is special and glorious. I advocate for it. I'm all for it.
Number four, do you have a guilty pleasure movie?
Are you more
into reclaiming your time?
I'm not – here's the closest I get to that. One time I was really food poisoning or viral episode or something really
sick movies.
Really sick.
Yeah.
And turned on the modern remake of the movie Hairspray. And in my delirium, I was like, this is the best movie of all. And I still have a soft spot for this movie. I think that some of the songs are catchy. I would never sit and watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
What I've watched, I'm like, okay, some of it is all right and some of it is not. But I thank that movie for getting me through.
Yeah.
The peak fever moment of everything's, I'm going to die here. But no, if Edna Turnblad dances the dance or whatever.
Right. All good.
And also that there's a big final number in that movie that may as well be Farrell's song Happy. They are, in my mind, identical songs, and maybe it's, again, because of the fever.
Right.
Because of the sick. As close as I get to a guilty pleasure is there's some good songs in Hairspray.
Yeah. And then finally, Movie Going 101 with Ben. What's your ritual at the movie theater?
It depends on the movie and the company. I tend to be a good what do you feel like? I'm fine with that. And it depends on, am I having dinner after? Is this my dinner?
Right.
But I know one friend of mine is I got to get popcorn and put Milk Duds in it and that kind of ritual thing.
Yeah.
I like to go to a theater with assigned seating. I like to sit 2/3 of the way back in the middle. I like a popcorn. I like a Barks root beer
because
it has caffeine in it.
Yeah. That's Tig's drink.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard that on the Tig episode. I was like, yeah. Good one. Smart Tig.
Yeah.
We have something in common. If we ever go see a movie, we're both going to have the Barks root beer.
Right.
I'm averse to sitting in on the sides of the thing. Why having an immersive experience if you're going to be aware of the fact that you're getting an angle on the screen.
Yeah. I'm with you there.
If I'm candy, which I tend not to be, I think in the modern iteration, I'm a peanut M&M's gentleman.
Yeah.
But as a kid, Junior Mints Junior Mints 90%, Raisinets 10% of the time.
Okay.
My brother was a Snowcalfs guy.
Yeah.
Which is it's why we're not close.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, buddy. This is a lot of fun.
Me?
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. This was a lot of fun. Can we zoom out and Ira Glass this thing and like, what have we learned? No, that's it.
No, we're done.
All right.
All right.
It ended?
Yep. All right, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that one. If you were a Coen Brothers fan and a Miller's Crossing fan, I can't imagine that you wanted any more on that movie because we really got into it. And the discussion continued after we left. We went and had some great Chinese food in Eagle Rock and kept talking about Miller's Crossing kind of for the rest of the night because that's what Ben and I do. We get into some great conversations together. And he's one of my best industry pals. Can't wait to see him again. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Follow him on Twitter at BN Acker, A-C-K-E-R. He's always doling out the funnies there. And go check out Thrilling Adventure Hour if you haven't listened to that yet. It's really great and features just some of the best, coolest actors and comedians in Los Angeles. So that is it for this week. Look forward to Mini Crush coming up on Monday. And until next time, why don't you check out a foreign film for a change? Because reading is fundamental. Movie Crush is produced, edited, engineered, and scored by Noel Brown from our podcast studio at Pond City Market, Atlanta, Georgia.